He's the columnist for the Register Guard. Grab the sports section, see what's on his mind, catch up with what you've missed online, registerguard.com. Follow along on Twitter, the handle at AustinMeekRG. How are you today, Austin?
Well, considering that I'm going to be getting on a flight in a couple hours to go to Las Vegas, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah. How are you, Steve? You got a whole Tuesday night to yourself, and then you have to, like, soar to work, and then you've got time for Vegas. I don't throw the J word around a lot, but when people go to Vegas, I get a little bit jealous.
I don't blame you.
All right. So I know you're a big football fan. Of course, you got to cover Kansas hoops, games at one of the true hallowed halls, Allen Fieldhouse. So kind of, I call it my they pay me to do this. How high on the list does this time of year warrant with Austin the sports fan?
Oh, it's pretty high on the list. It's one of those times of year that you do have to pinch yourself a little bit and say, oh, wow, I actually get paid to do this. It's pretty sweet gig. There is a little work involved, just a little bit, but it's fun kind of work. You know, I've always enjoyed doing the big events. It's the most exciting time of the year for me, and maybe, you know, one of the best times of the sports calendar for me. So it definitely doesn't feel like work for me this time of year most of the time.
I saw you retweeted Ryan's piece. Quick football note, the buyout of ex-Duck assistant David Reeves, and the story was he had worked 26 hours, so he got $4,000 in salary and a $60,000 payment. I did the math. That comes out to about $3 million a year. How far off am I saying that's like the least harsh punishment for a Dewey ever?
Well, we'd all like to be so lucky, right, to get
sure.
arrested during your first week on the job and make $60,000 out of it.
I'm compiling a list of stuff I could do now.
Yeah, really. Who knew it could be so lucrative to get arrested? Now, granted, you know, he had a pretty good job that he no longer has and a contract. So, there definitely was some teeth to the punishment. I'm not going to say there wasn't, but to walk away with $60,000 out of deals, a pretty good arrangement for David Reeves, I would say.
Yeah, the ultimate golden parachute. Continue with Austin Meek, soon to be Vegas bound. Yesterday, the Pac-12 announced their regular season honors. I don't think the specific balloting is out, but Dylan Brooks, Player of the Year. I would imagine Lonzo Ball of UCLA was second. And with Brooks missing time, some less than stellar non-league games, you think they got that right?
I think they did get it right. I was really going back and forth on this, and my gut feeling ultimately pointed me toward Dylan Brooks. But I thought there was a chance Lonzo Ball could win it. The way I looked at it was I thought Lonzo Ball had the more complete season, if you look from start to finish. But I thought Dylan Brooks was at his best in Pac-12 play, and at his best was the best player in the Pac-12. You know, you look at Dylan Brooks, his best games in Pac-12 play, I don't think anybody else was playing at that level. So that's sort of what made me think he was probably the favorite, but I bet it was really close. And there was a great argument for both of those guys, for sure.
Yeah, I would imagine it was a pretty tight vote. And I would imagine Coach of the Year came down to Dana Altman and Sean Miller. Miller had to deal with the Trier suspension, three freshman starters. They had a big league recruit, Ray Smith, tore an ACL. This also looked like a toss-up. Too close to call, or which way might you have been leaning on this one?
Well, I liked Sean Miller. I thought really there was a case for three guys, Dana Altman, Sean Miller, and Steve Alford. You know, Steve Alford coming off a season when his job was being talked about. He had to give back a year of salary on his contract. You know, it was not a good situation at all for Steve Alford last year. And I do give coaches credit for the players they recruit. If your team has a big turnaround because you brought in a bunch of five-star players, as Steve Alford did, that's your job as a coach. So I don't hold it against a coach for working with talented players. But I thought Sean Miller was the choice for me for a couple reasons. you mentioned the Alonzo Trier suspension the whole season. A big part of the season, Arizona had that hanging over their head, losing Ray Smith in the preseason. I've watched Arizona quite a bit this year. I don't think this is Sean Miller's most talented team there. I'm kind of amazed that their record is as good as it is. And I think that's in large part a testament to him. I think he's a great coach, and I think he's done a really good job with this team. So that's probably who I would have voted for, too.
Yeah, I didn't really have an issue. And to tell you the truth, I think I may have been a little dismissive of the job Alford did. You've enlightened me.
great.
I'm really big on not taking accomplishments for granted. You quoted Dana Altman, who said, conference titles are hard unless it's Kansas. Actually, kind of funny but true. So from happy but not satisfied, or understanding what they might be able to do, the aftermath of clinching the conference and beating Oregon State on Saturday, what was kind of the mood among the coaches and players?
I would say it was a little more subdued than it was last year when they won it. No swing dancing in the locker room, we were told, so pretty tame celebration. But I think they definitely were aware of the significance of it, for sure. I mean, when you've only won 6 conference titles in 112 years, it's still a big deal. I mean, even though they won it last year, nobody should say that winning a conference title at Oregon is anything but a huge deal. To go back-to-back for the first time in school history, and, you know, they got pushed every step of the way, too. I mean, they've won 16 games in the Pac-12, and they needed every single one of them. It was hard. You know, last year was hard, too. But Oregon was 14-4 last year, and the second-place team was Utah. And I thought last year Oregon was clearly a cut above everybody else in the Pac-12. I don't think that was the case this year. You know, I think there's 3 teams in the Pac-12 this year that are all basically on the same level. And so for Oregon to be able to come out of it with a share of the title, I think you got to feel really good about it. And I think it's almost more impressive than what they did last year.
No, I think it's interesting. I mean, like you said, Oregon, I don't care what they've become, you can't take 16-2 in this league for granted. It's a great accomplishment.
Yeah.
Couple of final thoughts. One of our topics today, the value of conference tournaments among the power leagues, you know, 3.5 months of work versus 3 days. If Oregon somehow got run in the first round, make the finals, win the thing. I mean, how much value do you think this tournament holds? Let's be selfish, specifically for Oregon.
Well, I tell you what, I think it's actually really valuable for Oregon this year. I don't think it's the case every year. I think there are some years that the conference tournament really doesn't matter that much. But I think for Oregon this year it does, because right now that one seed in the West, I think, is up for grabs. I think it's the 3 Pac-12 teams in Gonzaga. One of those is going to come away with that one seed in the West. And I think if Oregon wins the Pac-12 tournament, they've got a really good case for that. I think if Oregon wins the Pac-12 tournament, you could see Oregon as the one seed in the West and Gonzaga as the 2 seed. And I think that'd be a great draw for Oregon, as opposed to getting shipped out somewhere as a 2 seed in the East or the South or the Midwest, where you got to run into Villanova or Kansas potentially in the Elite Eight. So I think the Pac-12 teams are all playing for a lot, those 3 at the top this week, because the team that comes out as the winner of the Pac-12 tournament is going to have a really strong case for a 1 seed in the West.
Yeah, I think you're right. It does vary year to year. Just real quick, I know it's off the beaten path, but when you look at these smaller ones, not the mid-majors, you know, the Missouri Valley, you know, the West Coast Conference, Conference USA, they'll have multiple bids. But you have a team like Milwaukee tonight who, if they win, they get in the tournament with 23 losses. Is there any wisdom to looking at the Horizon and the Summit and the Colonial and the MEAC and the Metro Atlantic and all those, and doing something about a team who goes like 26-5 and then loses to a 15-16 team in the final? Or is it just like, hey, that's the joy of championship week?
Yeah, I think it's the latter for me. I think that's what makes March Madness cool, is that you do, in these small conferences, you know, sometimes you have a team that just comes out of nowhere. And the name escapes me now. Whoever Oregon played in the first round last year was an example of that. I think they had a losing record, and that does happen. You know, it sucks for the team that has a great year in a small conference and then loses in their conference tournament final. It's like, you know, should one game erase a whole season's worth of work? Well, probably not if everything was fair, but you know, it's not always fair. That's an axiom of the NCAA tournament. It's the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat sometimes. You know, you see that team that had a great season lose in their conference tournament final, and some teams sneak in there with a losing record. It's crazy, but it's part of what makes it fun.
Holy Cross was the team from last year.
Yes.
Right. They were right around 500 on the season. All right, let's wrap with women's hoops. Man, that game Friday night in Seattle to beat Washington. I know Lexi Bando had a great game. And, of course, Sabrina with those steely foul shots. So they stumbled a little bit, but those two wins. So not only... I'm gonna, you know, or do we feel comfortable that they're in the tournament? But with a coach like Kelly Graves, could we do like a song quote here? And logical to think this could be the start of something really big for this program.
Well, I think it definitely could. I mean, they showed against Washington that they can play with just about anybody in the country. Washington was a Final Four team last year, and they're still really good. So those were three pretty impressive games for Oregon in that tournament. The Arizona win was impressive just because they had to battle back. They were down in the third and fourth quarter in that game and had to fight back. The Washington win obviously was impressive. And then I was impressed with how they hung with Stanford for as long as they did, because obviously Oregon was running on fumes a little bit by that point. But I think coming out of those three games, you feel confident that, you know, if Oregon is in like an 8-9 game and they end up playing a one seed in the second round, I think Oregon can play with them unless it's UConn.
Right.
You kind of throw it out the window if it's UConn, but anybody else, I think Oregon could play with just about anybody.
No, it was really exciting. I enjoyed the heck out of it. All right, this man is Vegas bound. He's tournament bound. Keep up with all he's doing. The Register Guard, registerguard.com online, on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Sir, you travel safe and, needless to say, enjoy your time in Vegas.
Okay, well, hopefully I survived the week and we'll be talking again next Tuesday.
Look forward to it. Take it easy, Austin.